Welcome to this deep dive. Our mission today is to examine something that, honestly, it feels a bit like science fiction, but it is actually happening right now.
Yeah, right this second.
Right. We are looking at what happens when human ethical values are mathematically parameterized for an algorithm.
Which is a heavy concept.
It really is. We're talking about the exact moment when philosophy ceases to be this, this abstract graduate level academic exercise and literally becomes hard-coded infrastructure.
Exactly.
This isn't just about lines of code in Python. It's about how we define and crucially, how we actually experience morality in automated systems.
And to really ground this, we aren't just going to talk in hypotheticals today.
No, we need a real example.
Right. We are examining a very specific, incredibly intense, real-world case study, the algorithmic grading crisis that completely derailed England during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Oh, that was such a mess.
A total disaster. We're going to analyze how a desperate technical solution to a logistical nightmare ended up forcing a massive, highly public confrontation with some of our heaviest concepts.
Concepts like equity, solidarity, and fairness. And to
Exactly.
really understand the stakes here, I want you, the listener, to put yourself in a very specific headspace. I want you to imagine a scenario.
Okay.
Imagine you're 17 or 18 years old.
A stressful time anyway.
Right. You have spent years, literally your entire adolescence, studying for a single definitive set of exams. In the UK, these are the A
The
levels,
big
the
ones.
huge ones. Your entire academic and professional future, the universities you can get into, the career paths that will even be open to you down the line, they all hinge entirely on how you perform on this one standardized test.
Right.
Now imagine a once-in-a-century public health crisis hits and the government simply cancels that test.
It is a terrifying proposition.
Exactly. Instead of you sitting in a quiet room with a pencil, looking at a piece of paper and proving your individual worth, a machine is deployed.
An algorithm.
An algorithm is going to generate a statistical prediction of your value. And here's the truly wild part.
Yeah.
That prediction is largely going to be based on your zip code and your high school's historical legacy.
It's a profound shift, right? I mean, we are moving from a system based on individual human agency to a system of pure statistical determinism.
Totally.
And to understand how society arrived at that point, we really have to look at the historical trigger.
Spring of 2020.
Spring of 2020. As the pandemic was completely surging, national testing centers across England were ordered to shut down.
Which makes sense for public health.
Of course. But traditionally, students in England are distributed to universities and colleges based strictly, almost entirely, on their raw scores from these A-level national exams.
So no testing centers.
No scores. Suddenly there are no scores. But the university academic year was still looming.
Right.
Oxford, Cambridge, all the other institutions, they still needed a freshman class. The students still needed to be assigned somewhere.
Because, of course, the logistics of modern society don't just hit pause for a pandemic. You
Exactly.
can't just have a year where nobody goes to college. So the government, and specifically the government's exam regulator, UFCoL, I believe it's called,
Yes, of course.
they essentially needed to invent a substitute for reality. They needed a technical fix to bridge the gap between the total cancellation of the real-world exams and the start of the university term.
Exactly. And the decision was made to use a predictive algorithm to figure out the scores the students would have received if the pandemic had never happened.
Which sounds reasonable at first.
Right, from a purely data science perspective, their methodology probably seemed completely logical, even straightforward.
Sure.
If you need predictive outputs, you have to gather historical inputs.
Mm-hmm.
So the algorithm analyzed past student performances on these exact same exams.
Okay.
But crucially, it didn't just look at the individual. It analyzed the historical track records of the specific secondary schools those students attended over the past 3 years,
Wow.
alongside the individual students' prior academic histories, like their mock exam grades.
Okay, let me pause you there because I want to make sure we're totally clear on how this math actually worked.
Sure, break it in.
The model is essentially looking at a cohort of kids from, let's say, a highly funded elite preparatory school.
Right.
The algorithm recognizes that historically, 80% of students who walk the halls of this specific school achieve top marks.
Historically speaking, yes.
So it applies that historical probability to the current graduating class. Then it looks at an underfunded public school in a completely different neighborhood where historically maybe only 5% of students achieve top
You're
marks.
exactly.
And it applies that harsh probability to those
You've
students.
got it. The system maps the historical distribution of grades directly onto the current generation of students.
That is brutal.
It generates an AI-predicted score that is genuinely intended to reflect the real statistical reality of what they would have earned. And here is where we hit the devastating irony of algorithmic efficiency.
The irony being that it worked.
Yes. By all mathematical metrics, the system functioned exactly as it was programmed to. It perfectly replicated the historical data.
Right.
It accurately modeled the entrenched systemic realities of the English educational system. And in doing so, it immediately triggered a massive, explosive national backlash.
Wait, let me play devil's advocate here for a second.
Go for it.
If the algorithm was perfectly replicating the historical data, isn't that mathematically fair? I mean, if the system usually produces those exact outcomes, why were people so furious? Wasn't the machine technically right?
Because being mathematically accurate about a flawed history is not the same thing as dispensing justice.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
The machine was absolutely right about the historical trends, but those historical trends were inherently unequal. When the results were released, nearly 40% of the grades that teachers had predicted for their students were actively downgraded by the algorithm.
40%.
40%. Mm. And the public anger that erupted from that can really be broken down into two distinct parts. The first part is just a visceral, innate societal discomfort with a machine generating life-altering academic scores.
Yeah, nobody wants their future decided by a spreadsheet.
Exactly. There is an undeniable indignity in having your personal potential calculated by an opaque, bureaucratic, mathematical function.
I mean, you had thousands of teenagers literally marching in the streets, protesting outside the Department for Education.
The footage was wild.
They were holding up cardboard signs chanting, "Fuck the algorithm."
Yes.
Think about that for a second. That is a profound historical moment, a whole generation's first major political act, their first real protest, wasn't against a war or a tax policy.
It was against code.
It was protesting a line of Python code.
It's an incredible image.
Yeah.
And it leads us directly to the second part of the backlash, which is where we hit a crucial philosophical distinction.
Let's hear it.
The algorithm provided the illusion of fairness, but it completely stripped away the experience of fairness.
That's a huge distinction. What's the exact difference between the illusion and the experience there?
Well, what's fascinating here is how society traditionally defines that experience of fairness. The fundamental defense of standardized testing relies on a very specific premise.
Right.
Everyone knew that historically, the system was highly imbalanced. Top-tier, well-funded schools consistently produced high scores and consistently saw their students assigned to the best universities.
And on the flip side,
lower-performing schools consistently produced lower scores and rarely saw their students gain entrance to elite institutions. Everyone knew the playing field wasn't level.
Right. The reality of the educational landscape was already completely skewed. But the defense of that system, the reason people accepted it, was always rooted in individual opportunity.
Yes.
Even though a student from a poorer school was statistically way less likely to succeed, they still possessed the chance, the physical, tangible chance, to sit at a desk, turn over the exact same exam paper on the exact same day as a student from the most elite, expensive academy in the country.
The ritual itself.
Exactly. The ritual of the exam, the pencil, and the paper is what provided the fairness argument.
Precisely. It is the fundamental difference between probabilistic modeling and human agency.
Right.
The algorithm effectively took those historical inequalities, baked them into the code, and presented them as inevitable, unchangeable outcomes.
Wow.
Because the predictive model relied so heavily on the past performance of the school, it mathematically erased the possibility of deviation.
It erased the outliers.
Exactly. Yeah. The AI effectively awarded zero or very few spots at leading institutions to students from lower performing high schools. Why? Because historically, those schools did not send students to Oxford or Cambridge. So the machine simply said, you won't either.
So if we bring this down to the individual student, what does this actually mean? It means the algorithm mathematically erased the statistical anomaly. It erased the breakout student.
The one who defies the odds.
Yeah. Imagine you are a brilliant, hyper-motivated kid trapped in a historically underperforming school. You might have studied fiercely for years, specifically intending to be the exception to the rule.
You wanted to be the one to make it.
Right. You wanted to be the one kid from your neighborhood to make it to Oxford. But an algorithm designed to minimize variance and replicate historical trends doesn't care about your personal determination.
It doesn't see it.
It looks at your school's historical output, applies a regression model, and adjusts your predicted grade downward to fit the school's historic curve. Your individual excellence is sacrificed to maintain the statistical integrity of your school's historical profile.
And this is a classic textbook example of algorithmic bias, but not in the way we usually think about it.
How so?
It's not a bug. It's not a programming error. It is bias as a perfectly executed reflection of historical realities.
Oh, man.
When the public, and especially these students, realized that kids from lower performing schools were having their grades algorithmically downgraded simply because of the physical building they walked into every morning, the concept of fundamental fairness just vanished.
The illusion was completely shattered. And the outcry was just immense. It was a complete PR nightmare for the government, and they were forced into a massive systemic correction.
They had to backtrack.
Fast. They couldn't stick with the algorithm. They had to pivot away from a system that optimized for historical replication. According to our source material to fix the issue, the metric itself was fundamentally changed. The concept of a single, unified national ranking table where every kid in England is stacked up against every other kid was totally scrapped.
And this is where the structural engineering of society shifts dramatically. It's a fascinating pivot.
Tell me about the new system.
Instead of comparing every student in the country against one another on a single, ruthless vertical axis, the system pushed the academic lottery down to the neighborhood level.
Okay.
The new standard evaluated students on a school-by-school basis. The top students from each individual school were selected to advance to the leading universities.
Now, that is not just a minor policy tweak.
Not at all.
That is a fundamental, ground-up philosophical shift. We are moving from a strict, unapologetic interpretation of meritocracy straight into a massive application of equity and solidarity.
Yes.
Let's unpack those terms for a second, because they get thrown around a lot.
They do.
When academics talk about solidarity here, they really just mean the belief that we're all in this together. The ultimate goal, the teleological goal, if we want to be academic about it, is building a collective society where the system doesn't structurally leave anyone behind.
Right.
By shifting the ranking strategy away from a national bloodbath to a school-by-school basis, the entire country, every single zip code, suddenly felt incorporated into the competition.
Exactly. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it fundamentally changes the definition of what a university cohort should even look like.
Think about it. Under the old rigid national ranking, the freshman class at an elite university simply reflects the highest raw scores, regardless of where they come from.
And in reality, that usually means they come from a highly concentrated number of wealthy elite high schoolers.
Right. But under the new standard, the one prioritizing solidarity, the cohort is artificially diversified geographically and socioeconomically.
Everyone in the country, in some sense, has representation on that campus.
The outcome is shifted so that excellence is harvested from every single neighborhood, rather than just the three or four neighborhoods that historically produce the highest test scores.
It sounds beautiful on paper.
It sounds incredibly utopian.
But this introduces what philosophers call the zero-sum dilemma of ethical goods.
The catch.
The catch. There are a finite number of desks in a lecture hall at Cambridge. There are only so many dorm rooms. You cannot mathematically increase the geographic and socioeconomic inclusiveness of a closed system without actively displacing someone else.
And that raises the most uncomfortable, important question about the real-world cost of engineering solidarity.
It really does.
Under this new school-by-school system, high-scoring students from elite high schools were actively bumped down a level or two in their university allocations.
Because academic excellence is often highly concentrated in a few incredibly well-funded secondary schools.
Right. So you run into this wild scenario. A student who was merely in the middle of the pack at an elite school might objectively possess higher academic capabilities, higher mock exam scores, and a better grasp of the material than the absolute top valedictorian of a struggling, underfunded school.
Right. Yet, under the solidarity model, that valedictorian from the poorer school is advanced.
They get the acceptance letter.
And the objectively higher scoring student from the elite school is denied their admission ticket. The higher scorer spot is literally given away.
This is the core conflict we've been circling this entire deep dive. We have two incredibly powerful, inherently good ethical frameworks, and they are colliding at full speed.
They are in direct, irreconcilable opposition.
Mm.
On one side, you have the principle of fairness, which is deeply rooted in meritocracy.
Right.
This is a strict hierarchy, assigning slots based purely on merit, excellence, and a single national standard. It is deliberately blind to background, prioritizing the absolute highest performance metrics, regardless of where they originate.
Okay. And on the other side?
On the other side, you have the principle of solidarity. This prioritizes national inclusiveness and systemic representation. It explicitly acknowledges that the playing field is not level, and it attempts to correct for historical disadvantages by ensuring every community gets a seat at the table.
The agonizing part, the part that really keeps you up at night, is that prioritizing solidarity demands the direct, unavoidable cost of denying top scorers their earned placement under the old rules of fairness.
That's a harsh reality.
It requires society to look at a 17-year-old student who achieved objective academic excellence, who studied just as hard as anyone else, and say, you did the work, you earned the raw score, but we are giving your spot to someone else for the overall health of the collective society.
That is a brutal conversation to have with a kid.
It is. And here is why algorithms make this so much more explosive. Algorithms force society to explicitly, numerically quantify its morals.
Yes, exactly.
When these admission processes were handled by human committees behind closed doors, there was always room for ambiguity. A committee could claim to value both merit and diversity simultaneously, balancing them on a subjective case-by-case basis.
They could fudge the numbers a little to make everyone feel okay.
Exactly. But an algorithm is completely literal. It requires mathematical parameters. You must tell the machine exactly what to optimize for.
You literally cannot mathematically optimize for both a single, strict meritocratic hierarchy and guaranteed geographic inclusiveness at the exact same time.
Math simply does not allow it.
One has to give. The algorithm completely unmasks our societal hypocrisy. It forces us to put a numerical weight on fairness, let's say 0.7, and a numerical weight on solidarity, maybe a 0.3. And then we have to watch as those two values grind against each other in real time.
This is exactly why the study of algorithmic parameterization is basically indistinguishable from the study of applied ethics.
It really is. Algorithms are never neutral. They do not exist in some sterile mathematical vacuum. They are automated philosophies.
I love that phrase. Automated philosophies.
They take our chosen ethical priorities and our systemic biases, and they scale them across society with terrifying speed and ruthless efficiency.
When we code an algorithm, we are essentially writing a constitution in Python. We are deciding who gets access to the future and what metric of human value justifies that access. We've spent this time examining how this played out with teenagers and university admissions, but the framework applies everywhere.
The implications extend far, far beyond the educational sector.
Oh, absolutely.
We are rapidly approaching a reality where similar algorithmic models will govern resource allocation in healthcare, loan approvals in the finance sector, and risk assessments in the criminal justice system.
It's everywhere.
The underlying philosophical tension, the friction between optimizing for a sterile historical accuracy versus engineering a more inclusive, representative future will completely dictate the architecture of our institutions going forward.
Which leaves you, the listener, with a profound, completely unresolved dilemma to mull over.
A big question.
We've seen what happens when we automate academic admissions, and we saw the literal riots it caused. But what happens when the stakes are even higher?
Much higher.
If you are forced to sit down at a computer and design the ultimate admission algorithm for society's most critical life and death roles, I'm talking about trauma surgeons or the structural engineers who design the bridges you drive over, which ethical good do you sacrifice?
It's the ultimate test of these values.
Do you strictly prioritize the mathematically proven highest performance, adhering strictly to fairness and meritocracy, knowing with absolute certainty that it will structurally exclude historically disadvantaged communities from holding those vital positions of power? Or do you prioritize social well-being and representation, enforcing solidarity, knowing that to achieve that inclusiveness, you are actively rejecting objectively more qualified individuals from building the bridges you drive over and performing the surgeries you need to survive?
Where exactly do you draw that line?